Did you ever think to thank God for what He's done in your life and what He's released you from? Do you realize I was headed when I was 18 at spending the rest of my life at being a Holiday Inn piano player? Do you know that? That's where I was headed. And a little over 12 years ago, Jesus Christ reached out and just changed my life. And I'm never in a situation like this that I don't think about that. And I think, you know, I could have been over there. And you know, but for the grace of God, I may still be over there. But it is good to be here. I realize, well, why don't you stand and stretch? Would you like to do that? No. Yeah, that would help, Ralph, because I'm going to have to hug this thing to be heard. Okay, you can be seated. Oh. Ralph's getting me a microphone stand. Let me say to you that I realize the excitement coursing through your veins as you face an after-dinner speaker. I've heard it said and believe it to be true that if all after-dinner speakers were laid end-to-end, it'd be a good idea. Thank you. I feel like I'm batting the Kit Kat Club again. There we go. Is that better? I'm encouraged. I hope we're not too loud. Let me see if I can talk to you from right here. Is that okay? Can you hear? I have the spiritual gift of loudness, and so I don't think we'll have any problem being heard. It is always such a special treat to be with you all. I have to tell you that this is probably my favorite group to speak to. I don't say that to puff you up, but I guess this is about the sixth or seventh time I've spoken to a BSU crowd from OU the last 3 or 4 years. I've spoken to 4 or 5 Vespers and a couple of these banquets and everything. And it's so much fun because y'all always act like you're anxious to hear what it is I have to say. And I'm sure you do that for all your speakers. And that is so refreshing because, frankly, BSU groups are kind of a yawning experience usually. I get invited all over the place to speak to them. And usually when you stand up and you look at their faces, what you usually hear from most BSUs, what you think you're reading in their thoughts is, now, we always have these meetings. And at these meetings, we always have a speaker. This is one of these meetings. You are the speaker. Let's get on with it, shall we? And which just motivates the life out of you. And then when you're sharing your heart and they begin to ask such deep questions as, when is this over? Or, do you know Billy Graham? And things like that. So it is always fun to speak to y'all because you always act halfway interested. And that's an encouragement. It's a special privilege for me to be here also because so many friends that I've got, especially the Harringtons. The last time I spoke to you in October, I think John and Angela had not yet had their babies. And now that they have them, it is so much fun. And of course, I have 2 little girls of my own and who are exceptional children. And so it doesn't take me an awful lot to get excited about kids. And I anticipate with the Harringtons all the things that they're going to face in the future because children are just outstanding. They really are. They say and do the funniest things. We have a nursery school at our church, and it is hilarious just to go over there and hang around for about an hour or so and just watch them. You know, you sidle up next to a 4-year-old the first day of preschool and just listen to him talk. Get up next to one that's learning to salute the flag, and he'll say stuff like, I fed the pigeons to the flag of the United States of America. They don't know. In fact, there are these 2 little boys, and this one little boy sidles up to the next one and says, how old are you? And the other kid says, I'm 5 years old. How old are you? And the little boy says, I don't know. So the 5-year-old says, well, do you like girls? Nah. He said, you're only 4. So children are fun, and that's one of the things that I anticipate for them. It's one of the things that I anticipate for some of you. Someday. How many seniors do we have? Let's raise your hands again. Let us get a look at you. How many juniors? Sophomores? Am I going too fast for some of you? Freshmen? Well, I don't want to hurt y'all's feelings, but when I was a senior here, I was out on the South Oval one day, and this little kid walked up to me. He had to be a freshman. And he walked up to me, and he showed me his schedule, and he said, "Sir," and right away I knew I had one. And he said, "Sir, can you tell me where Dally Hall is?" And I said, "What is that again, son?" He said, "Dally Hall." I said, "Well, bring me your schedule over here. Let me see it." So I looked at his schedule, and sure enough, it was Dale Hall. So I said, come here. So I brought him over here close, and I said, "Listen now, if anybody asks you, that's Dale Hall." And I just kind of patted him on the shoulder and sent him off. And there's no telling where he is this day. So I feel a special love in my heart for the freshmen. I know what that's like. They have given me the task of trying to say something to you that's worthwhile. And I hope I can do that. I did graduate from college back before the flood. I just graduated from seminary. So I'm totally educated beyond my intelligence by this time. And I may indeed do it again. You know, you never can tell. And as I thought about when I left here in 1972, what I was facing, and you know, the question that was most in my mind is there life after the BSU? You know, is there spiritual life after the BSU? Now, in my case, it was maybe a little more controlled because I went on to become a minister and staff member. Most of you, that's not going to be true. You're just going to go on out and be just your standard garden variety people. Just good old people. You're not going to have the clergy tag hanging on you. So you will not have the motivation that I had. See, they pay me to at least act spiritual. I mean, I'm paid to do that. It is worthwhile for me to do that. And unfortunately, there are a lot of our brethren in the ministry that are, you know, doing it for basically that reason. Now, that's not my motivation. But as I thought about what I faced when I left OU and what you're facing, and I thought, what can I tell you that would be really worthwhile? How can I summarize it? How can I put it down where you can grab a hold of it? Let me see if I can do it with two words. Okay? Here they are. Faith. Love. If I could say something to you that would be worthwhile, is that the two things God really wants built into your life are faith and love. Now, the reason I know that is because that was Jesus Christ's message. That was the Apostle Paul's message. You can just about summarize everything they did and say it down into those two words. Everything Jesus was a man of faith in communion with his Father. He believed his Father. And he was a man who showed love. Everything the Apostle Paul said had to do with believing God, loving men. And men and women, that will be and is God's aim for your life. Now, when you graduate from here, whether it be in a few weeks or this summer or next December or a year, whenever it is, you will have a degree from the University of Oklahoma and it will reflect your major. But I just want you to know that in the University of Life, God has selected your major. And you have a dual major, and it is faith and love. And whatever else you're doing, if you succeed in faith and love, you'll be a success. If you fail, you'll be a failure. And you can take that to the bank and deposit it, because it's the truth. Well, now, if that's true, how do you go about becoming a person of faith? And that's very, very important, because the writer of Hebrews in Hebrews 11:6 did say, without faith, it's impossible to please God. Now, unless he was just using that for filler because he didn't have anything to put between verse 5 and verse 7, more than likely he meant that. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. Let me suggest some things that are going to be very, very necessary if you're going to become a person of faith. And some of you are well on your way. Some of you are not on your way at all. And some of you are sitting on the fence trying to decide whether to get on the way. And I know that. I know what it's like to be a young Christian trying to decide whether or not you want to grow. See, when I was saved in 1969, Larry Woods was one of the ones that had the enviable task of following me up, and I was about as teachable as your water glass. And I can remember what that was like. And as I would stagger and stumble toward the kingdom, wondering what was going on, so I know where you are. But let me say this to you. First of all, if you're going to become a person of faith, Hebrews 13:7 ought to be a good verse for you. It says, remember your leaders who spoke the word of God to you. Consider the outcome of their way of life and imitate their faith. And I want you to think about who some of your leaders have been. Max, and Rao, Pam, Carolyn, Sandra, John, and Angela. Some of these other staff scattered around through the audience. They've been your leaders. Think about what it is that they have that makes you want to follow them. And then imitate that. Follow your leaders. Follow what you've been taught. Now is the time to put it into practice. Not when you're here at the BSU when somebody's going to ask you what you got out of your quiet time. The time to put that into practice is when you're out where nobody's going to ask you. I used to make things up when I was here. Because somebody would always ask me what I got in my quiet time, and I've inspired several passages. Because I would be threatened. And I came to find out that what I got out on my own, it really mattered very little what I had said I got out of my quiet time when I was here. What mattered was I going to have one now? Imitate the faith of your leaders. What is it about Max that you admire? Figure that out. Figure out where he got it and imitate it. Now, that's very scriptural because Paul said in 1 Corinthians 11:1, be imitators of me, just as I also am of Christ. He said in Philippians 4:9, what you've learned and received and heard and seen in me, do. He said, y'all want to be like Christ? Just look at me, look at what I've done and what I've taught you, and do it. So I'll charge you to do the same thing. Remember what you've been taught, and then do it. And if you can do it, without being in this atmosphere, without somebody patting you on the back and telling you how neat it is that you did that, or without somebody being ready to rebuke you if you don't do it. If you can just do it on your own, brethren, then you're on the way. And I pray for you that that'll happen. Another thing you need to do to build faith in your life, when you leave here, you need to find a good fellowship of people that you can spend your life with, a good church. I really believe that if you don't do that, you probably won't be around a real long time. It is sad for me to think of some of the people that I knew earlier in my life who had a walk with the Lord, but because they got somewhere and got out of a fellowship, that they are no longer around. Now, in order to do that, you're going to have to do a couple of things. First of all, when you find a church, you need to automatically make the assumption that your pastor and the leaders know at least as much about the Christian life as you do. Now, what that does is safeguard you against pride. And second thing it does is put you in a position of being spiritually teachable. Now, the reason I know you ought to do that is because I didn't do it. Okay? We had a young man in my church about 2 years ago that joined the church, and I really believe now, looking back on him, he probably had some things to share with us. He was a good man. He'd had some training. He probably could have had a good ministry in the church. But you know what he did? He came in and proceeded to tell us where we were wrong. And started off by just going to every staff member and saying, you know, I really believe that your ministry could be increased in this area. And I really believe you're putting your emphasis in the wrong area. Well, now, regrettably enough, he was right about some of those things. But you know what? He left. They have moved now. And he did not have a word of ministry in that church in 2 years. Because he was anxious to instruct the pastor on where he was out of God's will. Now, men and women, you will be wise to heed that. Do you know what I would do if I was an average layman moving into a church? Do you know what I'd do? If I really wanted to have a ministry, and I think some of you do, don't you? I would go to the pastor or the ed minister if it's a large church or somebody like that, and I'd walk up and I'd say, listen, my name's Mike Thompson and I just joined the church and I really want to serve. Now, I don't have an awful lot of time and I can't do a lot of jobs, but what is something you really need me to do? And then whatever they gave me, whether that be teaching a Sunday school class or working with the RA boys or something, I would take it and I would do it. And you know what will happen? After I do that job faithfully, then when I want them to do something for me, the odds are an awful lot higher of them doing it. You see, in order to get along with staff members, you have to know how they think. Well, I am one, and I know how we think. And you find somebody that will fit into the program and support and things like that, most of the time then, if they have an area they can help, the leadership will let them do that. So I don't want you to violate that. You need to do that. Get to know God. Get to know Him through doing the things you know to do. Get to know Him through being in a fellowship of people. If you make a lifelong process of getting to know the Lord, from this night forward, or from before, or from after this, if you begin to know the Lord, you know what will begin to happen? You will become a person of faith. And you know why? Because you will begin to know God as He is. You'll begin to discover things about Him. Let me share two or three things I've discovered about God as I've continued to try to walk with Him. First of all, I have discovered that God is extremely patient. Now, I have proven that in my own life. Many of you may have heard the tape that I did 5 or 6 years ago here on the tongue. I understand that it gets checked out from time to time about how we're to use our tongues correctly and everything. Dennis, you ever heard that? Good, I thought you had. I'm one of those like you, Dennis. Everybody used to ship me those messages on the tongue, you know. So hang in there, be encouraged. No, don't you? Well, now, the bad thing about making one of those tapes and putting it in a library, though, is when people listen to that thing, they naturally assume that the speaker must have had that down, or they wouldn't have had him speak on it. You know what I mean? The last 6 years of my life since I put that tongue message in that tape have been one constant re-encouragement of God's faithfulness and patience. September 12th, my birthday this year, start of my 30th year, I prayed and I said, God, I really want to learn some things. That was about 5 o'clock in the morning. At 4 o'clock that afternoon, I got caught in a teasing match with a woman staff member at our church. And I have a very fast mouth. And the more upset she got, the funnier I got. And I really can do that. You know, my motto is, if it moves, talk to it. And I just, and I started teasing her. And I got so carried away, I didn't realize that she did not think it was too funny. And she got her feelings hurt. And the next thing I know, we are back in her office and she is hollering at me. Tears rolling down her cheeks, and she is hollering at me. Now, I'm the assistant pastor of this church, you understand. I got a lot of clout. You know, when I stand and preach, people take it seriously. When I tell them to do something, they do it. I mean, I got a lot of clout, and here is the staff member hollering at me at the top of her lungs. And to make it worse, there are two laymen sitting right outside her door. And I walked out of there thinking, good night. First of all, I knew she was wrong for being so sensitive, and I prayed God would convict her of that. But then after I moved beyond the initial smoke screen, I went back in my office and I sat down, and guys and gals, I was so discouraged. Because, see, I've been doing that stuff my whole life. And I know better than to do it. And I've told God I wasn't going to do it anymore. And here I had done it again. So I had to call her and say, listen, I was really wrong. Will you forgive me? And then I had to call those two laymen and say, listen, you know, that little scene we played out there in the office a while ago, that was my fault. And I was kidding her and it got out of hand and I'm just wrong. And I said, that was a bad testimony. Will you forgive me? Now, that was not a lot of fun. But God is very, very patient. And for most of you, that's good news. You wouldn't be around if God was not very patient. You remember the story of Jonah. Well, most people don't really understand what one of the key things in the story of Jonah was. We just know Jonah rebelled and then God got his attention and brought the Assyrian Empire. Assyrian Empire was one of the most bloodthirsty empires the world has ever known. We know now, and we've discovered, that they used to wallpaper their walls with human skin. Bloodthirsty cutthroats. God told Jonah to go to Nineveh and tell him to repent. Would you like to guess which empire the capital of is it? Nineveh is the capital of Assyria. Jonah replied, "You want them to repent? You go tell them." Now, see, we understand Jonah a little better. Well, God got his attention and brought him back, and Jonah went and preached, and they repented. And then you know what Jonah did? He got stark raving mad. And you know what he told God? God, that is just like you. I knew that if they repented, you would forgive them. Now, see, that is the kind of God that we deal with. He is extremely patient. And that should be an encouragement to you, because some of you are being defeated daily by the same things. You know what I mean? And I want to give you a good word. You're going to continue to do that. You will fall and fall and fall, and yet thank God he is patient. And I discovered that about him as I've continued to pursue him. Another thing I've discovered about God as I've continued to pursue him is that he's very faithful to take care of his children. I've shared many of these things with some of you before, but the latest one that's been in my mind, I shared with you 2 years ago at a banquet about our old car and how God had worked with it. Well, we began to pray about 2 years ago for a new car, or a car, newer, and I was up to God. June 13th, 1979, I wrote that down in my prayer book. And my little girl was two, and she began to pray. We began to pray in earnest. That's 21 months ago now. We began to pray. Now, Melissa was two, and she would pray, God, I want a car with four doors, a big car. You know, and she would be so specific, and I just knew she was going to give God her zip code any minute. You know, she just had it down. But that was fine, and we went ahead and prayed. And men and women, we prayed 19 months for that car. 19 months. Probably five times a week. Seemingly no break at all. In fact, about 6 months ago, I wrote down in my notebook, right underneath that, I wrote buy or receive, and I put a question mark after it because God, I said, God, I don't know whether you want me to get the money and pay for it or whether you want to give it to me because I don't have any money. And we prayed for this car, and our Nova had 132,000 miles on it. Well, about 8 weeks ago, one Thursday night, my wife was at choir, and a guy called me and said, what are you doing? I said, nothing. I said, well, I'm going to come by and see you. So he came by, and my little girl and I were there. He walked in, he sat down, we talked a little bit, and he said, you got a dollar? And I said, yeah, I got a dollar. He said, well, get it out. So I got it out and handed it to him. He reached in his pocket and handed me the keys of this car, and he said, here, your car is an embarrassment to your friends. You know, I want you to have this. A huge luxury Oldsmobile. Beautiful car. Four doors. And I think the most special thing about that was not the fact that I had prayed for it, but when Melissa saw the car and she was jumping back and forth from seat to seat, saying, can we keep it? Can we keep it? And when I finally got her calmed down, you know, down to warp two, I said, sweetheart, you know where we got that car? You know what she said? She said, God gave it to us. Well, see, she's never going to need to hear any of my messages on faith. She doesn't need to hear me stand up and preach the stars down about how God answers prayer. Because she's only four. Now she's praying for a puppy, and I'm trying to counteract that. You know? And I just have a sneaking suspicion that puppy's going to show up on our doorstep. I'm taking verses out of context and everything trying to do this. But see, as you get to know God, and you get to know that he's faithful and that he's dependable, then your faith increases. And men and women, if your faith does not increase, you probably won't make it. You know why? Because as you get older, your life will become more complex. And the faith you have right now will not suffice. The amount that you believe God right now will not do it in 15 years. Because your problems will have multiplied. And if your faith has not grown proportionately, you probably won't make it. Your faith needs to grow. God is concerned about your faith. I pray for your faith that it will grow, that you'll begin to believe God. That you'll begin to believe that God is who he said he is and he will do what he says he'll do. Well, not only should your faith increase, but God's concerned about your love. Not only concerned about how you feel toward him, he's concerned about how you feel toward other people. Now that is extremely significant because Jesus Christ did not die for a good idea. He did not die for an ethical standard. He didn't die for a statement about how things should be. He died for people. See, it didn't cost God an awful lot to create things. He simply spoke those into existence. But when God saved people, it cost him his son. And God is concerned about people. And we are to be concerned about people. And you know, they can do tremendous damage to their lives. And not only can they do tremendous damage to their lives, life can do tremendous damage to them. About 2 weeks ago, I got a note asking me to go by and see a family, and I really didn't know anything about it. I just went by to see them, and they have a little daughter that is a year and a half old, cystic fibrosis, which is a killer. In fact, she may indeed be dead tonight, because I have not talked to them in 2 or 3 days, and she was not supposed to live. And to stand there with those folks and know they were hurting, and that they are people and precious to God. About 10 weeks ago, I went to bed one night, and the phone rang, I guess it was about 10:30 or so, and I picked up the phone. And on the other end of the line, this voice said, "Reverend Thompson," and I knew she didn't know me, because people who know me don't call me Reverend Thompson. So I thought, well, she didn't know me. She said, "Reverend Thompson, you don't know me, but you visited our baby in the hospital." And she told me about it, and that had been true. And I'd left a little card for the family. And she said, "I just got home from the hospital, and they have told me that my little girl's brain is dead. And I'm supposed to go back in the morning and tell them what to do about those machines, and I don't have a minister. And you're the only one I knew. So I thought I'd call you and ask what to do." Now, the reason I share those things is not for sake of drama. The reason I share that is to let you know people are hurting. Either the circumstances of life are hurting them, or they are hurting themselves. And men and women, if you become involved in anything else outside of people, you're involved in the wrong thing. See, whatever your vocation is, your objective is to be serving people, getting the gospel to people who need it, helping people in need, ministering to people, loving people. Now, if you have a danger, it would be this. Because of your background and because of what you've been taught, you could add 2 and 2 and get 5. You could do something like this. You could go on out from college, get involved, and then have a nice, safe little ministry of doing nothing but being with people like yourself, leading small group Bible studies with people that look like you, smell like you, act like you. And get enough gratification from that to tell yourself that you're involved in the things that God's involved in. Now, that may be true, but it also is true that most people are never going to be in small group Bible studies. And if you limit your love and service to people, to those kind of ministries, you're in bad shape. Now, am I involved in that? You bet your life I am. I'm involved in small group Bible studies. I believe in them more today than I did when I was at OU, because I've seen them work. But I understand there's more to ministering to people than a safe little ministry. If my church in Arlington has a weakness, it is because we are affluent and we like it. And many of you are in danger of doing that same kind of thing. Go out and become affluent and salve your conscience to the extent that, well, look at this, I'm having a quiet time. I'm sharing my faith. Therefore, I am ministering to people. When God might be saying to you, yes, you are doing that, and I'm pleased with it, but I want you to open your eyes and look around. It's a big world. Francis Schaeffer, in his book, How Should We Then Live, made a very astute and a very bothering statement. He said that Western Christians are willing for the rest of the world to suffer as long as our prosperity is not threatened. And he is right. We are willing for people to suffer as long as my personal prosperity is not threatened. In fact, I'm willing for the rest of the world to starve so that I can eat well. Now, the reason I say all those things is because I want you to have your eyes open to people. And all those other things that you're doing, and if you're not leading, sharing the gospel, leading people to Christ, you need to be. If you're not teaching the Bible effectively, you need to be. Those are the words of life. But I want you to understand that not everybody will fit into your pattern. You will have to go get some of them, and you'll have to get dirty to do it. And that is a real lesson God is teaching me. Jesus loves people. And people have problems. And in order to touch people, I have to touch their problems. And that gets messy. Develop your faith
by pursuing the Lord. Develop your love. Serve people. Ask yourself, where is a need? Where are some people I can serve? And get on with it. Now, I have walked with God, I guess, pretty steadily now for about 10 years. And I'm glad I have, and I appreciate His grace. But you know, what God is looking at in my life and in your life is the long run. When Jesus Christ takes us home, whenever that is, whether that be by death or by His coming, He wants us to still be walking with Him. And the goal that I would have for you and for my life is that we can say what the Apostle Paul said when he wrote that last letter to Timothy. He said, Timothy, I'm a whole man sitting here in chains. A lot of my friends have fled. But brother, I want you to know, by God's grace, I have finished it. I have fought the fight and I have finished it. And now there awaits for me a crown. Let me share with you an illustration that I shared with some of you before, but it communicates so well. Mount Everest, you're aware of, is the largest mountain in the world. And although it's the largest mountain in the world, it's been conquered. It's been climbed something like 30 or 40 times. And yet it is still extremely dangerous. And every year you'll hear on the news or you'll read in the newspaper that somebody else has tried to climb it and didn't make it. Several years ago, a Japanese team tried, and they got somewhere up on the top, and they didn't make it. And only one of them even made it back. He got down to the halfway place where their camp had been, and when the people drug him in and revived him and brought him back around, when they finally got him back where he could talk, they said, "Where's everybody else? Where's the rest of the guys?" And he said, "Well, I don't know. The last time I saw them, they were still headed for the top." Now, I hope that can be said about me 25 years from now. If somebody asks you, "Hey, have you seen Mike Tyson lately?" I hope you'll be able to say, "Well, no, I haven't seen him, but you know, the last time I saw him, he was still headed for the top. Still plugging along. Faith still growing. Love still growing. Nothing spectacular, just pursuing the Lord." And men and women, if that happens in your life, you'll be a success regardless of what else happens. Let's pray and ask God to make it so. Father, it is so easy to talk about being serious with You, and yet it is so difficult for us to do. But if we know our own hearts, we really want to walk with You. We really want to see the world as You see it. We really want to see people as You see them. We want to get to know You through growing to love You through Your word and through prayer and through a fellowship and through Christian friends. We really want to get to know You like that. And we want to touch people as You touch them. We want to help people that are hurting. We want to minister to people that need ministering to. We want to train people so they can in turn do it again. We want to lead people to Christ. And God, I just pray by Your grace that in the years to come, we'll have the joy of seeing many of these men and women doing just that. Involved with You wherever they are, whatever their vocation is, that their goal would be believing You and loving people. Father, thank You for loving us and for being so patient, putting up with the same stubborn rebellion again and again, and continuing to pick us up and brush us off and send us off again. We love You. We do not love You like we should, but we do love You. You have always been a joy to us. May we be a joy to You because of Jesus Christ, Your Son. Amen.